This Week in Tennis.
Hey, Craig, big shout out to Francis Tiafoe, number 10 in the world. Bravo, Francis. What do you think about that, Craig?
It's a surprise to me. I haven't watched him over the last few years, but in the last maybe 18 months, he has definitely shown signs of improvement. And I think you'll agree that's a pretty big achievement for Francis.
That's a big achievement for anyone. Welcome to This Week in Tennis. I'm Phil Nasens. He's Craig Doyle. And we're here today to kind of wrap up the French Open, take a look at Queens and Halle. We're not going to do any WTA this week. Next week, obviously, we'll be talking about Wimbledon because that comes up, I believe, the 3rd of July it begins. What a great, great performance yesterday from Francis Tiafoe. I actually bet against him. I took Struff. And then right before the second set, Craig, right before it was like 5-6, I said, this puppy's going to a tiebreaker. And one of the things and one of the main reasons why Francis Tiafoe is where he is today is his outstanding tiebreaker record, Craig. You know, he went from, I guess it would be 2017, where he probably won like 15% of his tiebreakers, to last year in 2022, he won 65%. And this year, he's already at a robust 61%. And if you can drag someone in a tiebreaker and win those on grass, you're going to win. So I scalped Tiafoe live plus 146, hedged, and ended up making a couple of bucks, Craig. But boy, what a performance, huh?
Yeah, pretty impressive performance. I think it must be about the first time in, 10 years since two Americans have been in the top 10. So it's a bit of a turnaround for American tennis. The next question we'll be asking it in about a week's time is, can he win a big one?
No.
You don't think there's a way there? I know we're not, Djokovic, very difficult to beat. We'll chat about that later, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. But Tiafoe's someone who should be getting to quarterfinals. Is it a possibility that other guys have an off day and the door opens for him? We've seen it before with the likes of Marin Cilic, Dominic Thiem. The door's open for these guys at the right time. Is there something in the future that could possibly happen?
Well, that would have to happen. A lot of good things would have to happen. You know, I will say this. Since he signed up with Wayne Ferreira, his game has changed. You know, Wayne was a very cerebral player, if you remember. And I think a lot of that has rubbed off on Francis. You know, one of the things I really am impressed with Francis, and I always have been, and you know this, is his racket preparation. If you notice, there's hardly any. This is why he was able to wound Struff on Sunday with his backhand returns. That's beneficial on grass. Now, I wouldn't say he could win Wimbledon this year. We'll have to wait and see, really. I want to see how he plays at Queens. He's playing on Tuesday, I believe. But he could. I mean, he had a great chance at the U.S. Open, I thought. I see him as a guy who, and don't take this as a negative, because it's not. Because getting into the top 10, I don't give a damn who you are. If you're top 10 in the world at what you do at any point in your life, you've accomplished something. So congratulations. But there still needs to be more, Craig. You know, his serve it's big, but it's not forceful. Do you know what I mean? It's not going to intimidate you. He doesn't intimidate people. Struff, I think he fired 30 aces yesterday. But where he gets his thing and where he could win, but I don't think he can, is that return game, which is getting better all the time. But to answer your question, I don't see him winning a major. I think he's just probably one of those guys. He got to the top 10, bless you. Congratulations. I think he can go higher than that. But that bar that he needs to cross now, I think it's too high for him. What do you think?
And it's too high for most players. There's a lot of guys in that top 10 who probably are never going to ascend to the top level. Certainly not while Djokovic is still here and Nadal is still here. Unlike you, I'm not going to be betting on Tiafoe for Wimbledon in a couple of weeks' time. But I do have him in that bracket of players that if the stars were to align, that good things could happen for him. That's going to be, as you said, challenging, but we have seen it in the past where there have been Grand Slams where people have been missing due to injury or surprisingly knocked out because there are reforms. So I'm not going to say that it's impossible. I like the way that TFO plays. I like the way that he's been playing recently. We used to joke here that we wouldn't back him because he was costing us money every time we did. I just don't see that player anymore. And you're right, it's down to the coaching. It's changed. I think it might even change again. I think he might evolve over the next year or so. And I'm not writing this guy off from winning a Masters such as Cincinnati, Canada, maybe even an Indian Wells or a Miami. I think the door is open for him to win tournaments like that. When you play best of three, you get that first set on the board. Conditions align. There's certainly a lot of Masters in the US as well that I think is favorable to him in the home conditions. I think I might even be looking at him after Wimbledon. I think if he gets to the second round, the second week at Wimbledon, and he's in the fourth round or maybe the quarterfinals, I'm going to be looking at him to possibly win something like Washington or out in Canada. I think he's going to have a big US hardcourt season this fall, and he's going to be one of the guys that we're going to be backing.
You know, I agree with that too. I think he will have. I think he can get to the second week at this at Wimbledon, but here he's the seventh favorite at Queens. So the public's not really interested in him. That's not to say you won't scalp him with a good price. It's 1400. So $1 gets you 1400 if he wins Queens. In contrast, Carlos Alcaraz, $220. A dollar will get you 220. So, I mean, you've got that to look forward to, too. But as far as TFO goes, congratulations. Holy shit. I never thought he'd get to the top 10. I remember watching him play where basically he looked like he was, you know, basic playing in circles, running in circles on a tennis court. You know, that's an LTA statement. A lot of those guys like to say that. But at the end of the day, good for him. Really good for him and good for Novak Djokovic. He won the French Open. That was a beautiful tournament for him. That was a great fortnight for us here this week in tennis. We ended up 15.2 units ahead with our tennis bets at Roland Garros. And that does not include the 350, the plus 350 for Novak Djokovic winning that I had. So good for me. And we also had Iga. So we did really well. We probably ended up about 22, 23 units to the good. You can follow me at BetStamp. The Flash is the name there. The link is in my Twitter. That's Nason's Phil. And you can find all those things. You can track all my picks, all our picks, everything that we do here at BetStamp. But Craig, Novak, people thought I was crazy to bet on Novak Djokovic at plus 175 to beat Carlos Alcaraz in a semi. Now, can I tell you a quick story about that first? Because this is funny. You're going to appreciate this.
The floor is yours.
Oh, well, thank you. Anyway, I'm at physical therapy. It's, I guess it was a Tuesday afternoon. And I was waiting so long for those numbers to come out because I knew that Joker would be an underdog. And there's no way I'm going to pass that up. So anyway, I can't see the betting board because it's scrambled there. They block all those gambling sites where I do physical therapy because there's so many athletes there or whatever. So long story short, I'm texting back. I tried to reach out to you, but you didn't reach back. So I'm trying to find out the number. I see it's at 175 thanks to a friend, a tennis friend. And bang, I almost re-ruptured my Achilles running to the safety zone so I could place that bet.
And it was the right call. I mean, why is Novak Djokovic ever not the favorite in a match? The best player probably ever, the best player on the tour that is fit at the minute, I couldn't see where they were getting these numbers from.
Yeah, you know where they got it from. They're all in love with Carlos Alcaraz. But if you remember, we've talked about this on this show, and others have as well, is that Carlito has a problem. You know, when he gets nervous, he starts to tense up, and then he cramps up. You don't see it often because there's not too many people out there who can drag this kid. but Novak did. The best, I knew it was over, Craig, as soon as Novak walked down there to check on his opponent. Remember how he did that? He walked over there like he cared about him. No, he didn't. He went over there to assess the situation for himself. You know, Novak's a competitor. He's a killer on the court. He didn't give a crap about that kid until afterwards. But that's who he is. He is now, he has now 23 majors, a number I never thought would get broken. For that matter, I never thought Roy Emerson's 13 would get taken, but Pete did that. He's got two more coming up this year. He'll be able to probably play at the U.S. Open. Who knows with the crazy political situation in the United States with these vaccines. But there's a very realistic chance that Novak Djokovic could walk out of there in New York with four majors on his mantle at the during one calendar season, which means, and I quote, he would definitely be the GOAT at that point, correct?
Yeah, that's undisputable. He was one match away from that a few seasons ago. Spoiler for next week, but I'm looking at the Wimbledon entry list and one name sticks out and it's Novak Djokovic. I don't see any other names sticking out where I go, that guy's definitely going to be able to put the pressure on Djokovic. He doesn't want to draw this guy. I think any draw is a good draw for Djokovic at Wimbledon. He's proven himself to be the premier player on grass. It's, for me, he's going to have three in the bag by the time he arrives in New York, and it will just be a question of how well he prepares for New York and whether he could go that one step further than he has before.
Well, that's just it. And we bet against him, if you remember, at the U.S. Open. He ended up winning the semifinal that I lost, but then I went against him again. You know, trying to make history is difficult. You know, Novak Djokovic has put himself up at this loft over the bar he set. Over the bar. I go back and forth. You know, Novak is not well-liked. Yeah, I think that's become pretty obvious. I mean, not even in the locker room, really. I don't know. I think he wins it. I think he gets all four this year. I think this is what I think, Craig. I believe that if he wins all four this year, what does that give him, 25? No one's going to touch that for a long time. We've discussed this before. It wouldn't surprise me with all the bullcrap around surrounding him that he doesn't win the Grand Slam, the calendar, completes it, and just says, bye-bye. I'm done with this. I don't need this. No one can touch me, and that's it.
Well, there's one thing next year that he's going to come back for.
Well, that's the Australian Open.
No, it's going to be the Olympics in Paris. Well, right. He ain't got one of those. Remember last time, and he didn't win it in Tokyo when he was favorite. He was favorite the time before that in Rio, and he got eliminated by Del Potro in the first round. He got a really bad draw. He didn't get anything at London in 2012. He finished fourth. He lost out in the bronze medal match to Nishikori. So I think this guy is looking at that and going, I need to get a gold medal. So this only comes up once every 4 years, but it's the one thing that seems to have evaded him. I think he'll be desperate to play until... and that's at Roland Garros on the clay, by the way, where he's just won the French Open. I think he's going to look at that next summer, and that's going to be the big deal for him next year. If he gets a calendar slam this year, he's going to want to win that gold medal because it's the one thing he doesn't have.
That's a good point. What about Nadal? If that, you know, the Olympics will be played at Roland Garros on the dirt. Nadal says he's coming back next year, at least for Roland Garros. So if he, let's just say he does come back and he wins the 2024 French Open. Does he play the Olympics? Is his mission to keep Novak from winning that gold?
I don't know. He's
do you think he even cares?
His own, but,
do you think that any of these guys really care about Novak Djokovic?
I don't think Nadal was bothered in the slightest. I think next year he goes on one of those, you know, champions retirement tours. He turns up to all the events that he loved playing, and you might see him playing a little bit more, but not doing as well as you would traditionally expect him to do. He'll probably be in Roland Garros to win it, but he'll come to Wimbledon, he'll play a couple of matches, he'll wave to the crowd. he'll go to New York, he'll play a couple of matches, he'll wave to the crowd. I'm not sure he's going to come back at the level where he's going to keep pushing himself every week until he wrecks his knees or whatever happens. But yeah, I don't think the Olympics will be a big target for him. I don't think he'll be worrying about what Djokovic is doing. I think he'll just be looking to go out on a bit of a high.
Which is surprising to me because I would have never figured Nadal for the victory lap, the final hurrah. I would have likened him more to Sampras just walking off the court and just never saying another thing. You know, Pete Sampras never really retired. He could come back if he wanted to. Would he get a wild card at Wimbledon, you think? Let's say Pete Sampras decided to come back. Would they give him a wild card?
Wow.
I think they would almost have to.
You know, if he did, you know, when someone's won something so many times, I think there's a temptation because it's a draw, right? It sells tickets. It brings people in to watch. I mean, at his age, yeah, probably it's unlikely now. But if he had been, let's say, like 4. I think a lot of events would do if someone like that made a comeback. You know, let's McEnroe, for example. If McEnroe at 50 had said, yeah, you know, I fancy a go at the US Open, I think they would give him a wild card.
They were giving him wild cards at age 50 to play doubles events, smaller ones. So I could see that. I would love to see that. I would love to see Pete come out there one match on grass and just whack somebody like Milos did in the first round last week. Young Milos is back, correct?
He is. I saw that last week. He's playing in Halle this week, and I think he's on the ticket for Wimbledon. I don't know whether he's playing qualifiers or if he's got a wild card, but he's playing under a protected ranking. I don't know where that leaves him in terms of because he's like outside like the top 500 or something at the minute. I don't know if his protected ranking allows him to qualify directly for Wimbledon or not. I'm guessing that the fact that he's in the event at Halle and he's not had to qualify for that means that he probably will qualify for Wimbledon. I've not really looked into it, but it'd be interesting to see how he goes. I know he won one match last week against Kecmanovic before losing out to Jordan Thompson. I was keeping an eye on the results just to see how he's playing. But it'll be interesting to see. And he's one of several players I've seen coming back. I saw Nishikori had reappeared on the scene again.
Yep.
He ain't played for 2 years.
He won the Challenger in Puerto Rico yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, I hadn't even heard that he was in it. And then I just spotted an article this morning when I was reading just a little bit of tennis news, and I thought, wow, I thought he had retired. In fact, I was convinced he'd retired 2 years ago and he wasn't going to come back because he was another one that was suffering from a lot of injuries. I know he's not super old. He's in like his early 30s, but I think he had like hip surgery or something, not on the level that Andy Murray had, but I thought after he had the surgery that he looked like he wasn't never going to come back. So it's a bit of a surprise to see him, but we'll see how that one goes and whether we can cash in on that at some point.
Well, I cashed in on Jordan Thompson. That was pretty simple for me. I was going to bet on Milos first round. I think he was a $1.50 favorite or underdog. And I decided not to. See, this is what happens though. Cause I've been in this situation. I'm not going to say who I was with at the time, but this person was coming back, and he decided to come out to Corfu, give it a whirl. I said, what the hell? Let's hit and see what happens. God bless him. He turned out to be pretty good. Decided to come back, played his first match, won, fresh as a daisy. He hadn't played 2-3 years. And then the next morning, he woke up and said, what the fuck did I do? He couldn't even move. And that's the same thing that happened to Milos. Because, you see, you can practice and bust your ass and train for 2 years, but it's not the same as actually playing a tennis match. The moment they snap your picture with your opponent at center court prior to the match, those nerves flow. And that gets you in trouble sometimes. And I knew that Thompson would be looking at this like, I could scalp this kid. And that's exactly what he did. But I think Milos is going to get into Wimbledon, Craig. I'm pretty sure he is. But that tournament in Puerto Rico, you know, I did this just for the hell of it last Sunday. I bet on the match, Donald Young versus Bernie Tomic. Now, this is how far these guys have fallen. I remember when Donald Young was about 10 years old and John McEnroe said he's the second coming of me. He has better hands than I did. And I saw Donald play, and he was that way. Bernie Tomic, remember? He was supposed to be that guy, right? Supposed to be. And now they're both, this is how far they've fallen in the last 3 or 4 years. They were both, Bernie Tomic was a sixth seed in the qualifier of a challenger, and Donald Young got a wild card. Ain't that crazy?
I'm just looking at the entry list at the minute. I've just pulled it up.
Oh, yeah.
Milos Raonic is playing at 33 under a protected ranking, so he does qualify to get on there. In fact, there's 6-7 guys on a protected ranking who are in there, which is Gael Monfils, who's like 300 and something, is on there. Jiří Veselý at 400 and something is on there. Jeremy Chardy, all these names from the past, are all playing on protected rankings and allow them to get into Wimbledon. So there's quite a lot of guys in that draw who are coming back from injury, I guess.
Yeah, you know, and speaking of draws and qualifiers, there was a bit of a dust-up, if you want to call it, at Queens this past week. A lot of questions about why Tommy Paul and Grigor Dimitrov were qualifying for an event when they're both able to play in any event that they would like. You know, Tommy Paul, what is he ranked? 16, 15 in the world? They didn't inform Queens in time that they were coming for whatever reason. They didn't say anything, so they weren't put on the list. And then they had to make an exception for him to get into the qualies. So that's why they were there. But it's amazing watching Tommy Paul, a qualifier of a ATP event, and then watching a quality of a challenger with Donald Young and Bernie Tomic. I watched that match, Craig. I bet that
you
match.
You did watch that match. You were eager for me to join you in betting that match. Uh-huh. I just couldn't believe that.
You refused to write me back.
Well, yeah. As soon as I see the word Tomic, I generally get a shiver down my spine and try to avoid it. This guy costs me money every time I bet on him. Don't get me wrong, this guy's a good player. He could have been a very good player, but he just looks like he's not bothered sometimes, and it's all a bit of a laugh to him. He's on the ticket, and he doesn't try. I mean, people have accused Nick Kyrgios of that, but when you watch Bernie Tomic, it's a completely different level. He's got that Benoit Paire thing about him where I just don't want to touch this guy anymore.
No, I don't either. But I took Donald Young out of nostalgia. I figured, you know something? He must be playing in this event for a reason. It isn't to pick up $1,000. He sure as hell doesn't want to qualify after all he's accomplished in his life. I mean, he has had a decent career. I thought he would pull it out, and he got buried. I think he lost 2-1. It wasn't even close. It's just pretty much he's done now, and sad for him. But that's just the way it is. Roland Garros. You know what bothered me more about that tournament than anything else? Is these fake handshakes and these flybys and this Svitolina turning this into a political thing. I'm not going to shake your hand. You know, what kind of garbage is that? Leave your paw. I understand why they're upset with the Russians and by proxy the Belarusians, but Arianna Sabalenka had nothing to do with that war. You know, she has nothing to do with it. She's actually spoken out against it. And what's worse about the whole thing is we've got these people.
I know exactly like you said. You've got these journalists, and I mean, you're not going to go this length, but they've got journalists who are trying to put words in that kid's mouth.
Yes.
Like, they're making it so difficult for her to play that she has to avoid the press conference because she feels so uncomfortable. I mean, can you imagine coming from a place like that where it's a dictatorship, It's a different political system that you don't understand, and I don't think a lot of these journalists do understand what these places are like. That's your home. You've got family and friends there, and journalists are piling pressure on you in front of the world to speak out against the political leaders in your homeland. So effectively, you feel like you can't go home and that you're endangering the people that you love at home because you're having to sit in a chair and answer questions after performing at your work. You know, that's her job. Her job's to play tennis. But for some reason, she's become the ambassador for the people of Belarus or Russia or Ukraine or whoever. I think the tennis journalists are getting this completely wrong. I don't see this happening in any other sports. I don't see people being sat down and being told to speak out against the political system in their country. I don't believe for a second that this is the only two countries where they're engaged in a war with another nation. I'm sure there's plenty of countries with questionable political systems. But this attack on sports stars and forcing them to become political ambassadors is not right, especially in a single sport like this, where when she's put in that chair, she feels like the whole world is watching, and they are watching. I think it's been a horrible situation for Sabalenka. And I'm going to put this out here right now. You're going to see this again at Wimbledon in a couple of weeks.
Oh, yeah.
It may not be Sabalenka, but she may be the most high profile. But this will be the first time the UK has welcomed the Russian and Belarusian players back since they banned them previously. That was the UK government, by the way. That was not Wimbledon, the tournament. But I can guarantee you it's going to be the same journalists. They're going to be lining up Medvedev, Rublev, Victoria Azarenka, anyone that they can get their hands on. Mm-hmm. Those are the kind of questions that are going to be coming. So I've got to say, just don't expect this to go away. We're going to see more of this in a few weeks' time.
You know, but and I'm disappointed. I get why Svitolina is upset. I would be too. But you know what? You know better than that. And the fact that she is leading the charge, I just root for her to lose. I just want her gone. That way I don't have to watch that shit. You know, this is an opportunity for tennis to be better than everyone else. But unfortunately, we've got this mentality. And let's be real honest here. The Ukraine is no less corrupt than the other two countries you just mentioned. I've been in all three. I've coached in all three. You know, I could say a lot of things right now. But this is a tennis show. I'll save that for a different show I do. But look at Craig's breathing. He knows. He was waiting for me to say something, but I'm not going to. We're going to stick to the tennis. I'm just very disappointed that this kind of nonsense has to continue to occur. I'm disappointed in Svitolina for even trying to push this. And the other girl that's doing this thing too, Kostyak, is it? Is it Kostyak? Another tweener who will never win a major. You know, be quiet. Shake their hands. Show them that you're better than everyone else in the world, but unfortunately they can't, and there's a reason for that. Again, I think I better stop now. But Craig, I gotta tell you, I am excited about this Queens. Really excited. Alcaraz, $100 bet's gonna win you $220. He's the favorite. Fritz, the second favorite, $700 for a $1 bet. Alex de Minaur, no way. Don't bother him. That's $1,100. Cam Nori, 1,200. Murray, 1,200. Olga Run, 1,200. Francis Tiafoe, 1,400. Tommy Paul, who had to qualify, is at 16. He's the eighth favorite here. Dimitrov, the ninth favorite. Korda, 10th. And then it goes on. You got Musetti, who probably shouldn't be plus 2,800. Rusevori, 2,800. Dan Evans, he's a kid who likes to play there. Mannarino's a nice player. What? Milos Raonic, 4,000. Jordan Thompson, 5,000. What do you think, Craig? What do you think about this event? And if you had to pick a winner, who would that be?
Taylor Fritz.
Yeah, I like him too.
It might be a bit of a surprise, but because you've got higher ranked players in there, but he's got a really nice draw. He's playing against a Spanish player in the first round. I don't know. Other than Feliciano Lopez, there are not too many Spanish players play great stuff on the grass. Second round, he moves on from that one. He's probably going to be playing Manorino. Manorino or Brody? Well, neither of those guys are a challenge for someone like Fritz the way that he's been playing. He's in the same section, possibly meet De Manure and Murray at the third round stage. But I just look at it and I think there's not a lot of good grass court players in the section that he's in, with the exception of maybe Murray if he's playing particularly well. But Taylor Fritz, he's a young guy. He's been on it recently. I just look at that section, I think he's got to get to... I can see him getting to the final quite comfortably. And then it'll be a case of whether Carlos Alcaraz is his opponent, Tommy Paul, Francis Tiafoe, someone like that. But I think the route to the final for Fritz looks better than anyone in that top half, Scott. And I just think Fritz is going to come out here and he's going to win this one.
I can't argue that one. You know, Carlos Alcaraz, he has a shot. I don't think this is his best surface. He's actually, you know, something you said about who could beat Novak at Wimbledon. Carlito seems to think it's only going to be Nick Kyrgios. And I don't think so. Nick Kyrgios is going to be a favorite in his first round match. I think he's playing later Monday or Tuesday. And you might want to take a look at the underdog. He's made it pretty clear he's not even close to in tennis shape. And Nick is a different character. He's more interested in Wimbledon if he can get to that point. But I like that pick, Taylor Fritz. I like Carlos Alcaraz a little bit in this. Tiafoe, possibly, or he could lose in the first round, you know, because he just pulled off a biggie and he just made it to the top 10. He's traveling with his beautiful girlfriend. So who knows what kind of shape he's going to be in after that event in Germany. I'm sure there were a few lagers involved afterwards, maybe a bunch. You never know. I don't think they sell Hennessy there, so maybe it's that. So what I'm thinking here, Sebastian Korda, no shot. I don't like Sebastian Korda on grass. I'm starting not to like him much at all, to be honest. I think he's going to be a top 50. That's it. Let me see. If you had to pick, say, like this bet, for example, to win the quarter. Let me see. Who is it? Oh, winning halves, winning quarters. Quarter winner. Alcaraz, that's going to cost you 140 to win 100. Dimitri, everyone else on that side of in that quarter?
That's a hard one because Alcaraz, I don't know how good Alcaraz is on grass. I know he's played well on hard courts. He looks pretty good on the clay. I'm not sure how good he's going to transition to the grass. This is going to be the first time the microscope's really been on this guy on the grass. So I don't think I'd play that. I think I'd leave that one alone because you ain't getting good value on somebody that's kind of unproven on the surface at the minute.
And you know who he's in that same quarter with is Emil Ruusuvuori. And I think Ruusuvuori has the serve that can distract Alcaraz. Now, the second quarter, you've got Norrie. He's the favorite. Tiafoe right behind him. You've got Korda, Evans, Milos. Jordan Thompson plays Milos, and I think that's a pretty good bet for you. Van de Zandkulp is in there, and Kecmanovic is in there, the young kid that played at Illinois. If I had to pick a favorite out of that quarter, I'm going to go with Tiafoe.
If he arrives in
condition. Yeah, that's the whole thing, yeah.
You know, like that's a first-round challenging match for him against is it Zandeschlup? He's playing Van de Zandeschlup. That's a tough match.
That's a toughie.
I wouldn't write off Cameron Norrie because he's got that big lefty serve. I think that could go quite interesting. I think we could see Tiafoe against Norrie to win this quarter, which I think could be a really good match.
I think so too. Now, to win the third quarter, all this is plus money, by the way. Taylor Fritz, 130. De Manure, 300. Andy Murray, 450. Mackenzie McDonald, the Macker, 700. Adrian Manorino, 700. Liam Brody, who I don't even know how he got in this tournament over those others. Then you got Schwartzman, and then you've got Morales, Zapata Morales, and I would think that that's a Taylor Fritz all the way.
Yeah, it should be Taylor Fritz. He's the form player. He's by far the best player in this section. If Andy Murray comes through against Di Manure, I would expect him to possibly make it to play Fritz for the quarter. Always dangerous on grass, as Murray. He's won 2 challengers on grass the last couple of weeks. So I think he's won like 10 matches in a row at challenger level. That's good form coming in. It should mean that he's acclimatized to the surface pretty well. But when you step up, you play a Di Manure or a Fritz, it's going to be a much bigger level. So I like Fritz here. I really do like Fritz for this whole thing.
Yeah, I know you do. Now, the fourth quarter, Ruin is, they're all plus money here too, is Ruin, 220, Lorenzo Musetti, 350, Umber is 400, Jeffrey John Wolf, 450, Max Cressy, 500, Ben Shelton, 900, Ryan Peniston, 4,000, and Jan Chowinski, 10,000. I'm going to make a selection here. I'm going to go with Cressy.
Ooh, bold choice. I'm going with JJ.
Are you?
Yeah, I just, you know, I like JJ. I look at the section. This is so open. Like, I don't think, Holger Rune's a clay court player, right? Mm-hmm. He's a top player on the clay, but he's a young guy. He's only 20 years old. I just have this feeling that the grass isn't the thing for him. I may be wrong. You know, he's another one like Alcaraz, who he could come out here and do something on the grass and impress people. But I just have this sneaking feeling that the grass isn't for him. He wasn't at Wimbledon last year, if I remember rightly. But we'll see on that one. I think Cressy will probably knock him off in the first round in a bit of a surprise to people. That could be your money bet this week. I think Massetti's the same. You know, he's a top guy on the clay. Is he a top guy on the grass? Probably not. There's a couple of British wild cards in here that I just look at and think, yeah, they aren't going to go anywhere. So you're kind of looking at, for me, but if you're not playing Cressy, then you're either playing Wolf or Shelton. And I think, I know you're a big fan of Shelton as well.
Yes.
He's another really young guy, but I think I just got this feeling about Wolf coming in here. I think he'll do okay. I think he'll do okay. I think he'll beat Shelton in the first round, and I think that might be a surprise to a few people. And then after you get through that first round, Wynnell's going to be playing probably Massetti, who I think is beatable on the grass. I think if you're willing to come into the net and you're willing to play serve and volley, I think that'll get you quite far on this surface. Massetti's not going to play serve and volley. Holger Rune's not going to play serve and volley. So, yeah, I just think the door's open for someone like Wolf to have a good week, and that the price being offered, I like a bit of that action.
And why not? And why not? Now let's shoot over to Hallie real quick and handle that and call it a day. All of this is plus money. Medvedev is at 350. Sinner at 550, Stefanos Tsitsipas 700, Hurkacz 800, Zverev 800, and Andre Rublev rounds out the top 6. And then we cannot forget Jan Lennard Struff, 1600. Boy, what a volleying performance he put on, dude. He really, his serve and volley, if it weren't for them damn tiebreakers, he buries TFO because he embarrassed him. So I like him too. So let's look at these quarters. Do you want to pick a winner or you want to go to the quarters?
Let's go to the quarters first, and then we could chat about a winner later.
Okay, so and the top half of the draw, Medvedev is at, you're going to have to pay 110 to win 100. Nakashima is at plus 380, and the rest of these are all positive EV. You got Bautista Agut, 600. Oscar Oat, 1,000. Michael Yeamer, my buddy, 1,200. Daniel Altmaier, 1,400. Laszlo Djere, and Marcus Guerin, 2,800. I think Marcus Guerin's going to probably upset Daniil Medvedev. Is that who he's playing in the first round?
He is. Yeah, he is.
Medvedev don't give a shit about grass.
Well, that's a bit of a problem because he don't give a shit about Clay either. So now he's one of those people that we only look at on a hard court. I don't think Medvedev's ever been past like the quarterfinals at Wimbledon. So I just I'm not keen on playing him here.
No, I'm not either. You know who
not in that money.
No, you can't lay juice. You know, that's the thing I tell people all the time. This is a money line sport. You're not going to make it. You're never going to beat the juice long term. So why do you feed into it with these kind of bets? I tell you what, if I was going to pick one out of this eight, wow. I guess I would take Guerin. What do you think?
I'm always cautious of playing against the German players. There's a couple there.
A lot, yeah, for sure.
Altmaier's in as a lucky loser, and you've got Oscar Ott. He did some good things at Wimbledon the other year. I think I saw him losing to someone like Murray, but he looked kind of good on the grass. I may even play like Nakashima. I don't think... you just couldn't play Medvedev, so you kind of coin flip on someone else. Maybe Nakashima. He's another young guy, another young American who he's got a bit of an upside on him. My only worry is he went and lost to your man Ruusuvuori last week, so I'm not too sure how he's looking on the grass. But why not? I'll go with Nakashima to spring a couple surprises here.
Hey, why not? I'm going to stick with Guerin here. I'll log them. I don't know if I can log those at Betstamp, but we'll see what I can do. Second quarters, you got Rublev. All this is plus money, 185. Hurkacz, 220. Talon Griekspoor, 350. Yannick Hanfmann, 500. Christopher Eubanks, 1400. Yibing Wu is 1600. Carbellas Buena is 4,000, and Louis Wessels plus 6,500. I was going to play Louis the other day because that's a good name for grass for a British kid, Louis. Let me bet on Louis. But on this one, I'm going to probably, you know something? I am going to go with Hurkacz at this one.
I'm probably going to go in with you as well. He's got a bit of a buy in the first round, isn't he? He's playing like Eubanks or someone like that who's probably there to make the numbers up. Don't really rate Eubanks at this stage. That's probably the best play there.
All right, so let's move to the third quarter. We're almost finished, Craig, on this early Monday morning for me and Craig. Yannick Sinner, these are all positive plus money wagers to win the quarter, the third quarter. Yannick Sinner, 16 or 160. Struff, 450. Nick Kyrgios, 450. Lorenzo Sonego, 550. Sonego Kyrgios play, and I think Sonego is probably going to get him. Borna Coric, 650. Alexander Bublik, 700. Richard Gasquet, 2500. And then you've got Safaluin, plus 2800. If I'm going to choose one, I'm going with Bublik here as a surprise, banging aces on the grass.
Wow. Good play.
you don't think so?
This is the toughest section because Kyrgios comes out firing, then Kyrgios wins the section. And I know he played terrible on the grass the other week.
He did.
And he admitted that. He could just turn up and start firing aces or, you know, that big serve, big forehand combination, and there'd be nothing anyone can do about it. Obviously, the worry is his return game's not there yet, but then you've also got Sinner, and I like Sinner. He's knocking on the door, but he needs to tighten up a little bit in a few places and get his head straight because he's got the tools to win things. He looks a little bit like a younger version of Alexander Zverev to me. So, yeah, I could play Sinner here, but I'm not going to. I think I'm going to play Nick. I'll play Nick and hope that he gets that big cannon of a serve firing. Because if he does, he's unstoppable when he's in that kind of mood. So let's hope that he's improved since last week so that I could take him here, I can take him again at Wimbledon.
I know, because I think he has a good chance to win Wimbledon. He's the only one out there who could push him. Sinner's a model who hits tennis balls. Sorry, I know that offends, but what has this kid really won? I mean,
well, he's only 21, right?
So yeah,
I'm not
but
him off yet. But
he spends all his time in front of the cameras now. He's not even interested in tennis. Come on, stop. When was the last time you saw his name in the second week?
At a slam, I don't even know if he's been to the second week in the last year.
I don't think he's ever. But I see him as an Ana Ivanovic without the title.
Well, there you go. He was at the second week at the Open. So that's pretty much 3 slams ago now.
During the pandemic?
Last time he was at the Open, 2022, yeah.
Good luck. Good luck, Yannick. I love the fact that he's found another occupation, though. I think that's awesome. Fourth quarter. All this is plus money. Zverev is 175. Tsitsipas 185. Neither of those guys should be there. Shapovalov 400. Nicholas Jarry 800. Moutet 1600. Lloyd Harris 1800. Barrari 2200. And Dominic Thiem 2500. I'm sure there'll be some touts out there who think Dominic Thiem is going to get that done. And you know what? This is an actual tennis event where they make money and get points. This isn't a challenger in the middle of nowhere. I think Dominic Thiem goes in the first round.
Against Zverev, of course he does.
It's not even a match. I don't even understand why. But if I'm going to pick somebody in this section of the draw, give me Lloyd Harris in his big serve.
No, Zverev. He actually looked quite good at the French Open. He didn't look up to the level of winning the French Open. He ran out of gas a little bit by the time he came up against Casper Ruud. But in Germany, I think I have to back Zverev. I think the crowd will be massively behind him. He's the best German player on the tour at the minute, particularly on the men's side. In fact, he's the best German player on either side at the moment. I think there'll be a big backing for him, and I think he'll do well here.
Okay.
I don't think he's going to win it, but I think he possibly will be in the final.
Oh, yeah. I'm looking forward to this grass. I love the grass court. See, you know what's funny? I was looking back, Craig. We haven't done a Wimbledon preview ever.
Probably not. Yeah, it's...
Well, usually I'm coaching during the summer, but unfortunately that's over now. And it's also weird, too, because I don't have to worry. I can bet. I can talk about it publicly. And it's a lot of fun. I mean, well, I was anyway, but I don't have anybody calling me every other day. Why you got to say it like that? You know, why you gotta push out the gambling picks? Or you must have some inside information. No, I just understand the sport. And more importantly, I also understand the betting, which is two different things. We're going to get into that 1 week, Craig, when we're bored. We're going to talk about the difference, why people say gambling is all math, and why some are upset about that. But that's for another week. Craig, great stuff today. I'm loving this grass court season. I'm looking forward to talking about it with you like we do every day for so many years now. Going to be fun, I promise you. I will have a Wimbledon preview up at probably at MD Betting. I'm going to do a feature on Francis Tiafoe, actually, making it to the top 10 for that site. Probably posted on Tuesday for Craig Doyle. I'm Phil Nasons. We want to thank you for listening to This Week in Tennis.
This Week in Tennis.